It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set. He's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes. Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Medem.
And a good Thursday morning to Big Blue Nation. We're with you here on Big Blue Kickoff for the next 60 minutes. Taking your phone calls, 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. Want to hear your thoughts about all that's going on with respect to the Giants. The Senior Bowl coming up this weekend. So Jerry Reese and company, as well as other GMs and front office executives, are in Alabama looking over all of the top college talent as they get ready to make the next step in their careers and head to the NFL, and every team looking for their next top draft pick that will happen later this year in April. So we'll get into a little bit about that. It tends to be a busy time now as we near the Super Bowl, and then once the Super Bowl ends, clearly everybody's going to start to speculate who's going which way with respect to the draft. So certainly we'll be able to touch on that. We'll also go around the NFL. Darrell Revis, there's rumors now that the Jets may be shopping their top corner. Should the Giants be interested? Should somebody else try to claim him, or he does get off onto the market after the 2013 season? And John Schmelk here with me this morning. How's everything, John?
Everything's good, Lance. And our question of the day, where do you want the Giants to get younger in 2013 with Senior Bowl and all this other draft stuff beginning with the 2013 NFL draft and all the preparation getting underway? Where do you want the Giants to get younger next year in 2013? So there you have it.
And they could go a lot of different directions in terms of where the Giants want to get younger. I know we talked a great deal about the linebacker spot yesterday, and the linebacker spot is an area that perhaps they want to look in the draft to improve on. We also talked about defensive ends with respect to OC Umeniora potentially leaving. Do they look at internal options such as an Adewale Ojomo or an Adrian Tracy, or do the Giants, as they've done in years prior, now say to themselves, let's stock up on another defensive end? You know, the Giants' philosophy for years has always been, we're going to take the best talent available. So if we have 17 defensive ends on the roster, if we feel we can add an 18th, we'll take an 18th. And the same thing can be said for the linebacker, the corner spot, you name it. So it will be interesting to see what direction they go in, but I'll tell you this, Giants fans, do not be surprised if the Giants wind up selecting somebody in an area where there is tremendous depth, John. It's happened before. It would not be a surprise if it happens again.
Hey, look, the bottom line is that the Giants pick the most talented player at the best position when they draft. Position doesn't really matter. They pick the guy who provides the best value. They pick the best football player. And with the way the NFL goes with injuries, depth, free agency, and all that stuff, eventually, maybe not in year one, he'll become a very useful player for the Giants. So, you know, when they drafted Prince Amukamara, there wasn't really much thought that year to drafting a cornerback. You had Terrell Thomas at that point. He was healthy, hadn't gotten hurt yet. You had Aaron Ross, who was still healthy, a first-round pick. And you had Corey Webster. So there wasn't really a huge need for a cornerback in Prince Amukamara. You draft him anyway. What happens? Terrell Thomas gets hurt. You lose Aaron Ross in free agency. Now, all of a sudden, you need Prince Amukamara badly. When they drafted Jason Pierre-Paul, you had Justin Tuck. You had Mathias Kiwanuka. You had OC Umeniora. Do you really need Jason Pierre-Paul? Now, look. Do you think you need him now? Obviously, you do. So, you pick the guy that is the best player available. You use him where you can. You find a place for him. And you go and have your marching orders from there. Now, there are limits to that. I'd be very surprised if the Giants select another running back with a first-round pick after picking David Wilson last year, for example. Likely not going to take a quarterback with that first-round pick.
I think that's safe to say.
I think that's very safe to say. So I think those are the two spots where they probably won't go. Tight end, I think drafting a tight end in the first round, unless he's going to be the next Tony Gonzalez, is often a risky proposition. You know, wide receiver, they have Cruz, Nixon, Randall. Probably not going to go in that direction with a first-round pick. But I think anywhere on defense is a possibility. Anywhere. End tackle, linebacker, safety, corner. All those are a possibility. I think corner is probably least likely of all those spots because of all the depth the Giants have, and safety too with Roll and Stevie Brown. They like those guys at safety. But the Giants have a ton of options, and they're not going to box themselves in to a specific spot when they want to get the best football player on the board.
And with respect to the defense, you know, we could sit here and talk about this all day. There are needs in all of the positions that you threw out there despite the depth, given the struggles that the defense had over the course of last season with respect to stopping the run, also some issues in pass coverage. A lot of that was due to injuries. But to me, the area that I would start with to get younger is probably the linebacker spot. When you look at the struggles against the run this season, yes, it was a contribution because of the fact that they did not get a consistent pass rush. But at the end of the day, your linebackers are your second layer of defense. And if they're not getting in the correct spots and filling those gaps, of course, every running back across the league is going to thrive against this team. And I'm not just talking about middle linebacker, whether it be weak side or strong side. I think they need to infuse youth in this nucleus. You look at Boley, you look at Rivers, you look at Blackburn. It's not necessarily that these guys are old fellows that can't play football anymore. It's just you want to start to build for the future, and you want to have guys that you could turn to for not just next season to fill in a gap, but for the years to come.
I mean, if he can do it and he proves he can stay healthy, I think Jaquan Williams on that weak side is a pretty good option going forward. I think he's shown the Giants enough that he can be a starter at that spot as you move forward with Jaquan Williams. In the middle linebacker spot, though, you mentioned it. Chase Blackburn's not going to be here forever. Can Mark Herzlick, a young guy in the roster, step up and take that position, or do you have to look outside the organization? That remains to be seen. And on the strong side, if you're going to move Mathias Kiwanuka to defensive end, and with the likely departure of Osei Umenyiora, that becomes more and more likely. You really don't have a Sam linebacker on this team. Phillip Rivers can do it.
Phillip Rivers, good luck to him playing linebacker.
Good luck to Phillip Rivers playing linebacker. Keith Rivers can do it. But, again, he's never been healthy either. So I think there are a lot of tough decisions you have to make. But I think the strong side linebacker position specifically will look a lot different next year in terms of a starter, backup, veteran, youth. I think you're going to have a different player there. Frankly, you can always move Chase to the strong side if you have to as well, and then draft a middle linebacker. Chase has played that strong side linebacker position before. If you see a middle linebacker in the draft that you like, you can move Chase to the Sam. So the Giants have some options here. They have some young players like Herzlick, Jaquan, Spencer Paysinger, but they got to prove they can do it. They're not going to be given anything, and they haven't proven it yet.
And plus those three that you just threw out also contribute on special teams, and you want to still have them chip in each and every game with respect to that because, you know, that's an extremely critical group. Based on what happened throughout the course of this season, sometimes special teams was the X factor in helping the Giants win or lose a ball game. So you don't want to necessarily take away from the depth in that situation. And if they wanted to go the route of moving Mark Herzlick into a larger role and threw him in the middle spot, you're right, they do have the flexibility to now shuffle Chase Blackburn around because he has that versatility, he knows the playbook, and even before he got the starting role, they moved Chase Blackburn around. You know, he was a versatile player that they used on special teams, they used in the different spots within the linebacker corps, so it wouldn't be anything new, and it wouldn't necessarily throw Blackburn off guard where he would need six games to all of a sudden reacclimate himself to the Giants system. So I think there is some flexibility in that position. You look at the corner spot, there's youth there. You know, Hosley and Prince Amukamara, you've started to build for the future. Do you want to add another weapon at this point, given the fact that Terrell Thomas is a question mark and Corey Webster struggled somewhat? But, you know, how much stock do you put in this season with respect to Corey Webster? That's my big question.
It is a good question.
You know, a lot of injuries contributed to his play. And when we saw what Torrey Smith, John, did to Champ Bailey, doesn't that now dip the level of criticism that you throw the way of Corey Webster?
No, it wasn't just one game with Corey Webster over the course of the
but
year.
But that was one of the most notable games in which he struggled.
He did have struggles throughout. You saw Kevin Ogletree, you know, do some damage against him in that first game of the year against Dallas. A.J. Green had some big plays against him when the Giants played the Cincinnati Bengals. I believe a couple of the Steeler wide receivers made some plays on him in that Steeler game. And
Mike
that
Wallace
comeback
had
victory.
That big one.
Correct. So, look, he had a rough year. But again, In the past, Webster's been a streaky player, and he was always asked to guard the other team's number one wide receiver, which is a tough assignment for anybody. So I don't think you give up on Corey Webster, but I do think you start thinking about who eventually will be Corey Webster's replacement. It is the last year of his contract this upcoming season. He's going to be a free agent, and you plan for the future. I think Prince is one of those guys that's going to be a starter here for a while. J. Ron Hosley, I think, is going to be a guy in the slot maybe you can start him as well. But then you still need that third cornerback. And let's be honest, in this league now, Lance, you need three starting caliber cornerbacks. Whether one's in the slot or one's outside doesn't really matter. So I do think you eventually have to start figuring out who your replacement for Corey Webster is going to be. When a defensive back, especially a corner, gets into his 30s, there's going to be a natural decline in play. It's not Corey Webster's fault. The body slows down. There's probably no more physically demanding position in the NFL than cornerback. I think the dip there happens quicker than it does in other positions, except for maybe running back, where the dip might happen a little bit sooner. But you start planning for the future. I just don't think your future without Corey Webster starts next year, but it might start in 2014 just based on his contract situation.
And the way you plan through that is by the draft or free agency, and that's why it's not necessarily the decisions that are made in this year's draft just for what the team is going to do in 2013. It's also with respect to what the team is going to do in 2014 or 15 and thereafter. That's what the Giants need to start the game plan. Part of the reason why they stockpiled on defensive ends is because they knew eventually Justin Tuck's going to hit the market. Eventually OCU Manure is going to hit the market. So instead of hitting the panic button at that point and saying, oh my God, we need two or three extra defensive ends, you say to yourself, well, over the last couple of years, we've slowly drafted these guys and invested some money so that now we could turn to JP. Now we can move with Thaiss Kiwanuka back to the line. You have some additional flexibility. A lot of teams don't necessarily plan that way, John. They gamble. They hope they can re-sign these guys. And when they can't, all of a sudden, you're now scampering through the draft selections and hoping that you get somebody that will all of a sudden be game ready on day one. And that doesn't always happen, even with a first-round pick.
Now, in terms of the safety position, in my opinion, the Giants don't necessarily need to bring in a lot of youth in that spot. You have Anshar Roe, who's a veteran. He's coming back. That's fine. Stevie Brown, just 25 years of age. The Giants able to bring him back as a restricted free agent. That's going to be a guy I think that'll be here for a long time. The Giants will either give him a first-round tender, you know, keep him around for a year, or they can sign him long-term. He's a restricted guy. Then you have a guy like Will Hill, who's his third year out of college, another young player the Giants have high hopes for. So those two young guys, in combination with Anshar Roe, maybe they bring back Kenny Phillips on a short-term, low-money deal based on his knee injury history, which I think will scare a lot of teams away from him. And I think you have a pretty good young core of safeties. I'd be surprised. And then, of course, you have Tyler Sasher as well entering his third year. So that's another guy you have at that safety position. And I don't think the Giants look to draft a safety this year unless somebody really jumps out at them as being this tremendous player. I think they're pretty happy with their young core at that spot.
You wonder, with the youth at safety, does that influence their approach with respect to the corners? Because we talk so much about how Perry Fuel wanted to use that three safety alignment. So do they say to themselves, okay, we've got Prince Amukamara, we've got Hosley, Webster's still on the books. Maybe we don't necessarily need to jump early and get a corner. We can utilize a safety as our third corner throughout the course of the season. But then again, that's assuming everybody stays healthy.
Well, and you're also assuming that Anshar Roe, in his advancing age, can still play that slot corner spot. And not that Anshar Roe is old. He's not. He's shown no slippage. I'm not trying to imply that he has.
But he's got some mileage.
But he has some mileage. He's played a lot of years in this league. And asking a safety to guard receivers in the slot is a tough enough responsibility. And especially as a guy like Roe gets a older, it becomes even a tougher spot. And I think you'd like to see him in his traditional safety spot more often than not. So, do you trust Roll to play that slot corner spot for another year, or do you want to keep him at safety? And in that case, you do have to add somebody at cornerback. Interesting.
The good thing about Anshar Roe is at least he has shown the willingness for Perry Fuel to move him around. It's not as if he's the type of guy that says, you put me in the safety spot because that's where I play well. He goes, no, if you need me in the corner slot, I'll do that. If you want to leave me at safety, fine. If you want to put me on the outside, I'll do that too. He's shown tremendous amount of flexibility in his play. But then again, you know, Perry Fuel needs to say to himself, do we really want to wear this guy down over the course of the season? Fortunately, he stayed healthy. But if Anshar Roe goes down, then all of a sudden you're eating into your depth at that spot, and then you have to rely more and more on the likes of Stevie Brown or Kenny Phillips if you bring them back.
By the way, an interview with Anshar Roe will be hitting Giants.com later on today. Mixer Eisen did a little Q&A with him. He is a story. And then I did a little six-minute interview with Anshar Roe as well. That'll be hitting Giants.com later today. A little bit of a tease. We talk a lot of actually playoff football with Anshar Roe. It's funny. He brings up the Super Bowl a little bit. Talks a little Colin Kaepernick.
Wow.
Talks a little Tony Gonzalez, Ray Lewis. And then, you know, he basically went back, and I'll give you a little synopsis of what we talked about before we get to the phone calls. We'll get to you guys in just a second. But I asked him, looking back on the season, you know, having 3 weeks away from the game, have you figured anything out? And he goes, we just have to make sure we bring our best effort every single game. And, you know, we were just too inconsistent. And I asked him, well, you know, what is the consistency? Is it focus? Is it communication in the secondary? Like, what helps you guys do it? And he really still couldn't put his finger on exactly what that was. But I said, you definitely, and I followed up with the question. I said, so you definitely think, though, some type of intangible was missing when your team showed up to play against Atlanta and Baltimore. Something was missing in how you played that day, and that's why you guys played so poor. He goes, yeah, that was not the team we can be when we play our best football, and having games like that at the end of the season are unacceptable. We can't let that happen.
Still mind-boggling to me, though, given the motivational factor that they had in front of them.
Well, that's why I don't think it's effort. That's why I phrase it the way I did. Some type of intangible, because it's just hard to put your finger on exactly what that intangible is, because we've seen this team come up big in those types of spots so many times over the years, and you have confidence in them to do it, considering they've done it in the past. We've seen them do it in the past. It just seems so uncharacteristic for those two types of games, and throwing the Bengal game too, for those types of games to happen over the course of the year. And that's where Roll said he was really focusing on this offseason, you know, talking to the coaches, seeing what they want to do differently next year, staying in shape, and just making sure next year. And I think from what I could glean from his answers, he really thinks it's more a mental thing than anything else, because based on what, you know, Coach Coughlin said and the players said, practice going into those games was good, which means physically the team's together. And it also means they know the plays, because if they weren't running the right plays in practice, screwing up their assignments, the coaches would be upset. They wouldn't be considered good days in practice. So it's got to be some type of mental focus or fire on game day that just, you know, wasn't there. Or quite frankly, I mean, look, both of us have played amateur sports, whether it's, you know, high school or street ball, whatever. Some days you go out there and you just don't have it, and it happens. And sometimes even in the most important games, you go out there, you're excited, you want to play, and for whatever reason, your mind, your body just can't focus on and do what you want to do. And maybe that just happens to some of these guys on the pro level too. It's just hard to explain.
Well, you can speak for yourself, because my amateur career was an extremely storied career. So, you know, I don't want to brag here.
Yes,
but
backing up Sebastian Telfair's younger nephew
tremendous
on the JV Lincoln basketball team.
Not many
team.
People can put that on their resume.
That also means you're basically just a water boy, right?
Yes, essentially. I think that's the fair way to say it. Maybe scrubbing the floors, too, I got in. You know, I mean, I tried to expand my grasp of things at the school.
Did you ever wear a mascot costume?
No, that I did not go towards.
Really?
No.
Interesting.
Yes. Or pick up the pom-poms and, you know, get into other extracurricular activities.
So you never dressed up as the NYU Violet in your college days?
No, I did not explore those venues. Or the Bobcat Gorilla, as we like to call it, too.
A gorilla?
Yes, that was the emblem for the library there.
Oh,
the
gorilla.
Bobcat.
I know,
there was a gorilla that roamed around the court. Don't you remember this?
I don't know. There was no gorilla when I was there.
Oh, there was a gorilla.
I remember the Bobcat. I don't remember a gorilla.
Yeah, it was science that was basically occurring right in front of our eyes. Animals were basically evolving from bobcats to gorillas. It just made no sense at one point.
Was it the Phoenix Suns gorilla?
Yeah, that's basically what it was. I'm sure it came from those descendants.
All right, get to the calls.
Wait, I just wanted to piggyback seriousness off of one point. And Steve, we will get to you in a second here. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in on Twitter, hashtag GiantsChat. You mentioned that Tom Coughlin said that the team practiced well leading up to those games.
Yep.
So there wasn't at least any signs to him that the performance wasn't going to be good come Sunday.
He expected them to play well in both games heading into the game.
But the reason I use other examples to counter that a little bit, David Tyree, for example, did he not have the worst practice of his career the day before the Super Bowl?
He had one of the worst practice weeks you could imagine. Couldn't catch a thing, dropping every pass in the book, and then all of a sudden, game day,
it was a great game.
It clicks.
Yeah, and then look at basketball sometimes. You take your team through a shoot-around, right? They couldn't hit the bottom of the net if their lives depended on it. Yeah. Then they come out, and they're all of a sudden hitting from all angles and cylinders.
What happens all the time. In warm-ups, you can't hit a thing in the game. Yeah. You can't miss. And other days, you hit everything in warm-ups. The game starts, and you can't hit a darn thing.
So sometimes you feel really good because practice went so well, but it doesn't translate to games and vice versa.
And I know it's frustrating for a fan because you always want to figure out a reason something happens, why the team was so bad, why they didn't show up and play well against the Ravens and the Falcons. But honestly, and I used to be the same way. I used to figure there has to be a reason. There's got to be a reason why they were so bad. You know what? It could just be that sports. And sometimes you go out there and there's no specific reason. As a group of guys, you just don't happen to play well. And it's hard or impossible even to put your finger on what it was. It's just the random nature of athletics. You go out there, sometimes you have it, Sometimes you don't. I remember, for example, in the Olympics, one of the gymnasts, they were trying to win the all-around, I think, gold medal, one of the American gymnasts. And she had one event left, and she was the best at this individual event of any other gymnast. She had won the gold, I think, in the individual part of that event. I think it was the pommel horse or something like that. And she had to get, like, an average score, just an average score, in order to win the all-around gold medal or silver medal, something like that. And she does the event, and it's something that's usually easy for her, getting this particular score. She goes out, and she doesn't hit the landing. She falls. And the other, you know, gymnast gets the gold. She comes in second place in her best event, where she would have the most confidence and should have done her best and easily gotten the gold. Sometimes you go out there, even if you're the best at what you do, sometimes you just don't have it. You don't make the play. It happens. Is it fair or fun for fans of the team at that particular
not
time?
At all.
It stinks.
Yeah.
But that's humanity. These guys aren't machines. They're not robots. They're men. It happens. Mariano Rivera blows saves sometimes. Game 7 against the Diamondbacks, it happens. Guys can't be perfect all the time.
And that's why the players themselves sometimes have no answers, because they can't explain it. They know that they're aiming to perform at a high level, but sometimes, you know, there's not enough gas in the tank or the level of execution is not where you expected it to be.
I mean, you go out there sometimes, anything you do, whether you're in school, you're taking a test, you studied, and, you know, it's not like that you choke. You just go out there, it doesn't work out. You get a bad grade, did everything you could have properly to prepare, it doesn't work out. You know, you go out there to, you know, you're playing pickup basketball one day, you lose 5-6 straight games. You know, you can't hit anything. You don't have a reason why you stunk that day. You just stunk. It happens.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We go to the line, Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
All right, guys. Thanks for taking my call as usual.
Sure.
I have the show. First of all, before I say anything, let me just clear up one thing from Tuesday. I forgot my other fellow Washingtonian kind of, you know, basically rephrased what I was saying about Hakeem Nicks. I've never made light of the fact that Hakeem was hurt, and I realized it had obviously a negative effect on us. But what I was trying to say is I felt like we should use, you know, a lot of our other receivers.
Right.
But with that being said, you know, I just want to say, first of all, I have all the faith in Jerry Reese. So I'm really not sure what moves we're going to make in the offseason. But obviously, like everybody else, you know, the obvious position would be linebacker. I don't know if it's something we're going to do in the draft or through free agency. But I had a question for you guys. I was watching on the website. I saw we're looking at the some kid from LSU, the defensive end. And I watched the highlight film that looked pretty good. But then I had a chance to look at the Tostiles Bowl they played in against Clemson. And I didn't see the kid anywhere on the field. I mean, I just didn't see him getting it done. He looks like he has a pretty good engine on him.
Who are you talking about?
And I'm sorry, the kid from LSU, the defensive end. I'm really not sure his name, but I know on the Giants website it said that he was, you know, it was a possible draft pick we may be looking at.
But, okay, well, you know, honestly, like I'm not sure on Giants.com we've done a whole lot of, you know, draft breakdown yet in terms of who the Giants might pick. The Senior Bowl hasn't even happened yet.
Sam Montgomery, I think, is who you're talking about, Steve.
Yeah, I definitely got it from the website. There's no question. It was like a free draft, you know, possible viewing of, you know, of what it may look like, you know. And, you know, the kid looked, you know, in the highlights, he looked great. You know, he looked like he had a great engine. But what I think we lack most, what really kind of hurt us from last year, is we just the desire, you know, just pure, you know, attitude. And that's really what kind of worries me. I personally have lost faith in Corey Webster. I just, you know, I'm moved on from that. Personally, it's not even up a debate for me. But I really think that, you know, obviously we need to look at some, you know, a linebacker, because I just don't know if it'll be in free agency or through the draft. But with that being said, you know, as far as Mark Herzlick, I'm really not sure what anybody is seeing in this kid. I'm feeling much more confident than Chase Blackburn at this point. And, you know, I'm just wondering, what do you guys think? If we go linebacker, do you think it's more likely to happen in a draft or through free agency?
I would think it's more likely to happen through the draft, only because I don't see a lot of financial flexibility unless something opens up because they make a trade or somebody who they did not anticipate coming back winds up going elsewhere. But right now, I think the draft is probably the best game plan to improve. You also get younger, and you don't have to lock up a lot of money. So that's why it makes sense from the Giants' perspective to do that through the draft. Whether it's in the first round remains to be seen. because the way the Giants' philosophy has worked is they'll take the best player. So if the top linebacker that they were looking for winds up getting taken before them, you know, don't be surprised if they're not sold on the second linebacker and they think that second linebacker could fall to the second or third round. They'll wait on that linebacker and they'll wind up maybe stockpiling in a position that they're already deep in. So don't be surprised if that happens. But to me, of the two, I would definitely go draft to improve in that linebacker position.
Yeah, well, lastly, guys, I just want to say I think we got to find a way to keep Kenny Phillips. We definitely need to find a way to keep that guy. I love his physicality. Of course, we want to remain healthy. But I think, he, you know, in the safety position, he's awesome.
I think you can I'm sorry for interrupting you. I think you can bring him back, but I also don't think you can depend on him to be a starter. I think you have to have a backup plan ready considering his knee history. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, guys. Well, listen, thanks again for taking my calls, and of course I'll be listening every day.
Steve,
hi, Steve. Appreciate
anytime
it.
You're always welcome on the air. You do a great job. We appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Tom Rock from Newsday will join us shortly after 10 o'clock to talk a little bit of off-season Giants football. We'll touch on the draft, and we'll ask him about the Super Bowl as well. Why not? Tom does a great job for Newsday. We can chat with him in a few minutes. But first, let's go to Vic up in Connecticut. Vic, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
What's up, pal?
I just wanted to kind of pile in on your kind of introductory statements about the Giants. And,
sure.
I think that, you know, I think you can beat it and beat it and beat it, and there's so many different ways. And I think a lot of times Giants fans are kind of focused simply because we're Giants fans and we don't see some of the trials that other teams go through that are probably similar, but
right.
We don't watch those teams as much. But I think what the Giants really miss, you know, regardless of personnel or execution or anything, is I've noticed they just miss, and you mentioned it, is swagger. And somebody just mentioned attitude. I don't see that. I see kind of a team coming off the field on offense and defense, and when something goes wrong, they kind of just go sit on the bench. They kind of talk to each other a little bit, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of yay, rah, rah, which I think goes back to leadership. And I think, you know, when Michael Strahan was there, you know, he was a perfect guy, you know, to get people turned around. He'd slap some heads and talk. So I think it's just motivation. Now, to go back to your point about being an amateur, I was an amateur swimmer 100 years ago, and every time that I swam, I didn't feel the same way. The water felt different. It was too cold. It was too warm. Sometimes I just felt like I could go 100 miles an hour. So,
right.
Yeah, it's something that you just feel the day that you go out there. The bat feels lighter, and I think that can happen a lot of times. So I think that's a lot of what is wrong with the Giants is that, A, they need to get a little bit more swagger back, and that will come from leadership, and B, you're just not on your game all the time. So I think, kind of in closing, the Patriots, you know, they kind of epitomize, although I'm not a big Patriots fan, they epitomize kind of Bill Belichick, who's kind of just stoic and goes about his business. And I think they have a little bit of attitude, although their attitude didn't show very much the other day. So I think that's really the point that I just wanted to make, is that I think they just need to get back to having some leaders that just need to be able to self-motivate them and to be able to talk them through times when things aren't going good. And the bat feels a little heavy on your shoulder.
I think, though, that, Vic, they could get that from the coaching staff as well. You know, they don't necessarily need one player in particular. I mean, first of all, if you're at this NFL level, you should have your own motivational tools to get up for games. I don't think you need the teammate that sits next to you in the locker room to pat you on the back and say, you know what, buddy, this is a game that you really need to prove yourself. And I think the coaching staff can help supplement that to some degree.
And I think Ancho Roll did try to do that at points during the year. Remember his whole week where he's like, we need to get some more dog in us? Well, the dog, unfortunately, turned into a whimpering puppy the last couple weeks of the season. Yeah. But, you know, I think some of the teammates did try to do that, Vic.
Yeah, and I agree. And I kind of disagree with Coach Coughlin a little bit. I don't believe that practice translates into a good game. And you guys said it again. I think you're going to have a lousy practice and a great game and vice versa. I think it's just the day of the game, how you come out, how you decide you want to play, how you're feeling, and generally just – you know, again, I think it's about swagger. So we'll see what happens next year.
Sounds good, Vic. We appreciate
Hi, Vic.
The call. But as a coach, you have to assume good practice dictates the good games. You know, the whole thing you do over the course of the year is, you know, practice, 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 practice hard, practice important. If the coach doesn't believe practice dictates into what happens in the game, why? What's the point of practicing hard?
And might as well just have him go in a circle all week.
And your whole message to the team of having to practice hard every day is lost. So as a coach, it's what you do. You work these guys in practice, and good practices should dictate to the game. So I get what Vic's saying, though. Does it necessarily in reality translate? No. But as a coach in Coach Coughlin's position, you have to preach that it does. Otherwise, it's going to be hard to motivate these guys to come out and practice hard every day, which quite frankly is probably hard enough for some of the veterans on the team to do. If you start letting these guys believe that good practices don't necessarily mean good play in the game, it's going to be really hard to get them to come out and practice hard every day.
Well, then everyone's going to become like Ahmad Bradshaw. And I'm not saying that Ahmad Bradshaw is putting off practice, but basically he's saying to himself, I can get away without practicing right. because of my injury, and then I'm fine on Sundays. If everyone follows that trend, then you're in trouble. And Manning even hit on this after the season. You know, the fact that he was not able to go through reps with Hakeem Nicks each and every day, that's why they were a bit rusty when they got to Sundays, and the offense didn't click as it did earlier in the season or in years prior. It's eventually going to take its toll if you're not practicing at a high level.
201-939-4513. We'll get back to your calls in just a second, but for now, we're going to welcome him. Tom Rock, he covers the Giants for Newsday, does an excellent job. Tom, good morning. How's the offseason treating you so far, buddy?
It's already been pretty long, John. It's hard to imagine that the season's almost been a month over. For the Giants.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, we've been kind of talking about, Tom, and we kind of got off topic. We'll get back to what our original topic was in a couple minutes. But I had a chance to talk to Antrell yesterday. I had a couple chances to talk to some of the other players. From watching this team and having 3 weeks of kind of stepping back from it and watching the playoffs, have you been able to put your finger on exactly why the Giants threw up those two donut games at the end of the year against the Falcons and against the Ravens?
You know, I haven't. I don't know. I don't know that they have either.
No, I don't think they have. To be honest with you,
I'd be curious to hear what they said to you, because it just kind of came out of nowhere, and they were saying the right things, and they looked prepared. We know Tom Coughlin thought they were practicing well those weeks, and then they just came out on the field and it wasn't there, and that's a little scary though, because it's almost like. Remember Rick Ankiel, the pitcher, and you know, he was mowing him down, and then all of a sudden he went on the mound and couldn't throw a strike.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, you know, it starts to get into your head a little bit, and you start to get a little Chuck Knoblauch syndrome, sort of. And, you know, that could be a dangerous thing in football. You know, it's a good thing you have 6 months off before you really go back to work in football, so you can put that behind you and move forward. But it definitely is a little disconcerting that it happened, and it's so uncharacteristic, and that there were no answers for it. That, you know, they weren't injured, they weren't emotionally taxed in really any way during those weeks. There was nothing lingering about them, about those games. It was just they just didn't show up. And it's a little frightening.
Yeah, Tom, I could tell you from talking to these guys, they don't have a good answer either. I don't think the coaches have a good answer. And frankly, I think if that's a situation, and you mentioned it, you can't let it get into your head. So I think almost as a player and a coach, it's almost better, I think, not to dwell on those types of games, because I'm not sure there's anything you can do as a coach or a player to prevent something like that. I'm just not sure what you can do differently to keep that from happening again. You know what I mean? So you almost just want to move past it and almost act like it didn't happen, you know?
Yeah, well, their preparation, they liked their preparation for
yeah.
the game, and they were happy with it, and when the game started, they felt like they were ready, and they just weren't, I guess it's just a football mystery.
Well, Tom, speaking of preparation, we had been talking before you came on about Hakeem Nicks's injury, and we've been talking about, it seems, all offseason, about how the fact that he was never fully healthy really impacted the offense. You know, you were in the locker room. You've spoken to him on numerous occasions. What did you see out of Hakeem Nicks? What was the missing element that basically led to the offense being so up and down throughout the course of this season?
Well, I think at the end, he just didn't have a burst, and I remember one play. And it was, I guess it was against Atlanta. It was the Atlanta game. And Eli Manning threw a long ball down the middle.
The deep post.
Just beyond, just past his fingertips. And, that, I mean, that's the play. That's the one right there that they needed all year. And he couldn't churn it out to get those extra couple of inches to get that pass. And I remember I asked him after the game, I said, you know, is that the play you were missing? Is that the one that's holding you back? And he said, no, I felt like I was running fine this year. And I'm sure that was just, you know, player talk for, I don't want to talk about my injury right now. But he was just lacking. There was no Hakeem Nicks to his game this year. And the Giants need that. And, you know, Victor Cruz was very good at being the sort of number one that Knicks should be. And other guys stepped in, and we saw some Reuben Randle at the end there, and Dominic Hickson certainly had a very good year. But they need Hakeem Nicks to be the number one draft pick that they have, and the playmaking receiver. And he just couldn't do it. He was just incapable of doing it this year.
He's Lance Medel. I'm John Schmoke. We're joined by Tom Rock from Newsday on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com every weekday morning, 9:30 to 10:30. Tom, do you think Nick's getting healthy and coming back, and Reuben Randle having another year to mature to become a better wide receiver, and then throw in either Martellus Bennett's potential return or the Giants bringing another, you know, good to average tight end to fill that role, will that be enough to put Eli Manning back on the path they seemed to be on in 2011 and bounce back from what I don't think anybody would argue was an off year in 2012?
It should be. You know, I mean, if you think about three wide receivers, you go to Randle and Nicks on the outside and Cruz in the slot, and then you have a tight end, and then you got David Wilson coming out of the backfield. I think that's a lot of athleticism and a lot of weapons right there for Eli Manning to choose from. You know, it all comes down, of course, to offensive line play and different things like that. But I think they have a pretty good infrastructure of talented targets for Eli Manning. They just got to keep him healthy.
With respect to the tight end spot, as John just brought up, Martellus Bennett is a free agent. Pretty much the whole nucleus of the tight ends are all free agents. Where do you think they're going to go with respect to that position? Do you think that Bennett will get a lot of interest on the open market? It will be tough for them to match? Or are they going to try to go for probably the fifth consecutive season and bring in somebody young and new and try to make a big name out of them?
Yeah, I think they like Bennett. That's the sense I got. He likes them is more important, and you know, I would expect something to be done before he hits the open market. You know, he sort of hinted that he might take a little hometown discount, which is strange because it's only been his hometown for about 10 months. So
yeah, he loves the culture apparently.
he's definitely grown attached to New York, and he fits in here. And you know, I think it would be hard for him to go back to a more provincial NFL city. Where he'd have to reestablish his roots and his personality. I think, you know, he feels like he's accepted here by the team, and accepted here by the media, and accepted here by the fans, and not just as a tight end, but as a person. He's a very creative guy with his art and his music and photography and things like that. So I think he likes New York. I think he'd be willing to stay, and I think the Giants were happy with the progress that he made this year. I would be surprised if something didn't get done between the two of them.
Well, and you mentioned it all depends on the play of the offensive line, Tom, and I think you're 100% right, and probably more so than any other position on this roster, you're probably going to have some change on that offensive line. You have Booth and Beatty as free agents. Do you think those two guys are going to return? And what do the Giants do at right tackle? Are we going to see David Deal starting at right tackle in September of 2013, or are the Giants going to go elsewhere for that?
Well, they got James Brewer, and so he could, he, you know, they're still high on him, and they think he could be a right tackle, and he's certainly got that size and that skill set to be a right tackle. Left tackle is a little trickier, you know, if you get rid of Beatty or not get rid of him, but if you don't, you know, if you're not able to re-sign him, you know, there's really nobody on the roster right now who can step in and play left tackle at that level. You know, maybe Deal is probably the closest one that they have. So that gets a little tricky. You know, Booth, I think he'll come back. I think they like what he's done for them over the couple of years. He's one of the few guys on the offensive line who's never hurt, always practices, always plays.
Yep.
He's very consistent. I think that says a lot about him, and I think that does not go unnoticed by the front office.
Talking with Tom Rock of Newsday, who covers the Giants. Tom, we were talking about the offensive line, and the Giants will have a first-round pick. And normally the philosophy is, well, we'll just take the best player available as opposed to the biggest need. if there is some movement on the offensive line and maybe a Booth or a Beattie go elsewhere, do you see the Giants perhaps investing in an offensive lineman in the first round? Because let's face it, since the Sean O'Hara days, there is somewhat of a need to get younger on this O-line so you're prepared for seasons upcoming, especially if somebody gets hurt again.
Right. And we saw, you know, Chris Snee talk about it this offseason. Just last week he was on Giants.com. He was talking to Mike Eisen about, you know, every year he sort of weighs his future and his retirement. He has a big conversation about it. So he's, you know, he's not getting any younger, and he's certainly banged up. You know, there's a lot of there needs to be some turnover, natural turnover at that position, just like every position. And it's important to have a stockpile. Now you don't go out and use a first round draft pick for a guy you want to put on the shelf for a couple of years and wait for him to develop. I mean, that's what they did with a second round pick with Beattie, and that's what they did with a later round pick with Brewer. So a lot of the other guys they sort of found in free agency and picked up off of waivers. But if you take a first round draft pick on the offensive line, I think you need to plug him in right away. So depending on how free agency shakes out, that'll probably be one of the directions they would consider.
And how about defensive side of the ball here, Tom? Let's switch gears a little bit.
You just trade for Revis. That solves everything.
There you go.
Actually, out of curiosity, what do you think the Jets will be able to get for Darrell Revis? Coming off knee surgery, a guy who's going to be a free agent next year, team's not only going to have to trade for him, then sign him to a big money contract. What do you think the demand's going to be for Revis coming off that knee injury? What do you think the Jets are going to be able to get for him?
Well, I think he's a very good player, and I think he is high value. You know, you talk about, you know, not only are you trading away draft picks conceivably, but then you have him only for 1 year, and then you got to renegotiate a contract. And we all know what a Darrell Revis contract negotiation looks like.
Yeah, not fun.
And it is not pretty. And so you're really taking a kind of a long shot there to really make your investment pay off. With the trade value, so I don't think that there's going to be quite the clamor that the Jets may believe that there will be. Maybe they can package him with Tebow. I don't know.
Yeah, Tom, I happen to agree with you. Let's jump back to the Giants real quick. Defensively, you can make the argument the Giants have a lot of needs based on how their defense did last year. They didn't stop the run. They didn't rush the passer well. And they had issues over the top in the secondary. So it really gives them a lot of options in terms of the draft, where they want to go here. Where do you see the Giants' biggest need being on defense, heading into free agency and eventually the NFL draft?
Well, I think they need a playmaking linebacker.
Yep, and I agree.
I think that's the key. And you know, they have their Mike linebackers have been very good, very solid, and you have Chase Blackburn and Herzlick is coming along. They need a star player. They need somebody who could tear it up, and especially you're going to need a lot of speed, because look who's in the division there. Yeah, Chip Kelly, running, 30 plays a minute over there in Philadelphia.
Right.
You're going to have RG3 conceivably back from his knee injury. You know, he may be a few ticks slower on the clock, but he's still going to be the athletic quarterback that he was, and you're going to have, as always, in Dallas, you're going to have Tony Romo, but you're going to have the running back who gives them fits. Murray, is always difficult for them to track down. So I think they need to find a lot more defensive speed and a big playmaker in the middle, and that should filter out towards the other aspects of the game and then help the defense as a whole.
With respect to the defensive line, clearly O.C. Umenyor is likely to head elsewhere, so that means more than likely Mathias Kiwanuka will probably go back to his normal position. How much of a difference maker, Tom, do you think Kiwanuka can be with his hands in the ground and as an every down defensive end versus being a linebacker?
Well, I thought he was very good as a linebacker, let me just say that. But I think he's a lot more comfortable as a defensive end. That's where he was drafted. That's where he's always played. And that's where he seems to make his breakout plays for them, for this defense over the last couple of years, was when he was down on the ground. I think it's going to, you know, is he going to be as good a pass rusher as OC? Probably not. You know, is he going to be a little better against the run? Probably. But, you know, all that stuff, you know, weighs in and weighs out. And don't forget, he's still going to be probably the third defensive end in the rotation anyway with JPP and Justin Tuck, assuming that Tuck comes back and is, you know, not the Justin Tuck that we've seen the last 2 years, but the ones that he's promising that we're going to see in the future that reminds us of the Pro Bowl caliber player that he is. So I think Kiwanuka, you know, fits in nicely in that group. And don't forget, you know, towards the end of this year, he was playing mostly defensive line too. So it's, you know, it's not going to be a big change for him, but it will certainly should certainly help his production, I think.
Tom, how do you think the Giants view the cornerback position? They have two young guys in Prince Amukamara who clearly made a big jump in year number two, though he still hasn't been asked to guard the team's best wide receiver, which obviously is a big thing for a corner to have to do. Mm-hmm. Jaron Hosley had some good moments and plenty of bad moments, too, as a rookie playing cornerback. Then you have Corey Webster. He's a big cap number. He's getting up there in age. We all know how when corners hit those 30s, you know, years of age, they start to decline a little bit. How do you think the Giants view that cornerback position for next year? Do you think they believe they need an upgrade right away, or is it more of a situation where they start preparing for a position when maybe next year when he's a free agent or a couple years down the road, they can't count on a guy like Corey Webster? How big is the need, and is it immediate, or is it in the future?
Well, I think it was pretty alarming what happened with Corey Webster a couple of games this year. And, you know, we even heard Jerry and Tom talk about how that Ravens game was, in particular, was a very bad game for him. And you know, he was in decent position on a couple of those plays, and some of them were pretty remarkable catches. So it's sort of a balancing act to figure out what went wrong there. But I don't know that he can still be the premier cornerback that you need to hang the whole defense on. And there's always a lot of mistakes, it seems like, on his side of the ball. Whether it's him or not, there always seems to be miscommunications on his side of the ball.
That's fair.
That happens a lot. You hardly ever see those on Prince Amukamara's side this year. And which is strange, because you would think it would be the other way.
Yeah.
as Prince is starting to come around and really just played his first full year in the NFL. I think they like Prince Amukamara. I thought he was impressive. You know, I didn't know what to expect from him. I thought he was going to be a bit of a weak link this year with his first year in the league, and we didn't really know what to expect. But he played well. He played solidly. I don't know if he's still if he's ready to make that jump to the number one cornerback job. But you know, he's certainly on his way. And listen, they drafted him with a number one draft pick. They think highly of him. They think he's going to be a great player. And Hosley, you know, he was a rookie. He was up and down, but I think they see a future for him, especially in the nickel if they don't have to use Antrell there. That would be something that he could, with an off season to adjust and learn the nuances of that job, I think he'd be pretty good at.
Talking with Tom Rock of Newsday, we talked about the secondary. The safety spots had a lot of pleasant surprises, specifically Stevie Brown and Will Hill. Given how they produced this season, Tom, how does that change the philosophy of the Giants organization about what they want to do with, let's say, a Kenny Phillips, or perhaps go the route of the draft or free agency to bring in another safety, since both of them were really somewhat surprises based on how they produce game to game?
Yeah, and then, you know, I think it sort of makes Kenny a little expendable. You know, you hate to see that, but he'll probably get a better offer from someplace else than he will from the Giants in free agency. As far as bringing somebody in, I think you're still looking around. You can use that veteran presence that, you know, Deion Grant played such an important role for their defense last year, and it wasn't even on the field. He was just a calming influence and a good locker room guy. And, you know, maybe, you know, I don't want to put Antrell Roll out to pasture yet, but eventually he'll be that kind of a player, I would think. But For now, you know, maybe you bring in a free agent who's been around the league for eight or nine years and can teach Will Hill and Stevie Brown a couple of tricks and get them going and improve their game. You know, kind of the way Sam Madison did for the first of these last two Super Bowl runs.
Tom, final question for me. Super Bowl, what do you think? Niners, Ravens, I think I expect it to be a close game. Can the Ravens continue this run going for one more game? They remind me a lot of the Giants last year where they just hit their stride at the right time. They're playing their best football. Probably not the most talented team in the world, but do they have enough left in the tank to go out there and beat the 49ers in the Super Bowl?
I think they do. I like the Ravens. I like them for the reason that they were able to knock off the defending champs, and the 49ers weren't able to do that. Now the 49ers are a different team now with Kaepernick, but I like the Ravens. I think they're playing well. I think their road to the Super Bowl has hardened them, and the week of rest will give them a good break to get their legs back, and they'll be ready to go. I see them winning, you know, a fairly high scoring game. You know, 35-27 maybe.
Will you be in New Orleans, Tom?
I'll be down there.
Very good. So you'll be hanging out and partying with Bob Glauber every night?
Bob Glauber and I, yeah, we'll be down on Bourbon Street in the Garden District doing the whole New Orleans experience.
Very nice, man. Have a ball. We appreciate the time, Tom.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Thanks, guys.
That's Tom Rock from Newsday. Does a great job. I just realized with him and Mr. Glauber, we've had like a Newsday fest.
We're putting Newsday on the map.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm not sure if we're putting them on the map. Let's be honest for a second here, Lance. Come on.
Well, we're helping from a publicity standpoint.
Yeah, sure, why
so
not?
You can.
But Tom does a great job, and I think he made a lot of good points. And quite frankly, he seems to be really on the same page as you and I based on what we've talked about the
last
couple of weeks.
I mean, you know, as he mentioned, you could talk about it till you're blue in the face, but eventually it's all going to lead back to the same thing. And that's a lot of people scratching their heads and wondering, you know, why this happened, why they had a stretch of two games where things just fell apart and the team didn't show up. But you've got 6 months now, which you didn't have at this time last season, given that they went on the Super Bowl run, to, you know, reevaluate, look back at the film, assess the roster, and determine where you want to go from here. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing, given how this season played out, to have a lot of time to really step back, something that they were not afforded to have last season when they went on that great run.
Before we say goodbye, let's squeeze in one more call. Len was very patient, waiting in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good morning.
Hey, how you doing? Well, listen, I could have listened on the computer or listened on my phone. It's always a good interview with Rock. It's good when you get some, you know, outside people in there to, you know, give us a little different perspective. So
we tried to.
I appreciate that, and it was a great listen. A couple of things. Everybody wants that three down pass rushing outside linebacker, including me, but including the Giants. There are 32 teams that want that guy too.
That's true.
If I'm Jerry Reese, my starting point, I got to ask myself the question. Can I continue to protect Eli like we have protected Eli in the past? We got to make a decision on that offensive line. Maybe the players are there. Maybe it's Brewer who's going to play that right tackle spot, but maybe it's free agency to fill a spot at right tackle. But I think that's the first decision we have to make. Do we have an offensive line in place that can continue to keep this high-powered offense going? I'm not using those words loosely. I say high-powered because if you look at the number of points that we scored last year, it was a heck of a lot of points, and mm-hmm. I want to score more. So that's where I think the starting point is. I'm looking forward to the Pro Bowl on Sunday, seeing our guys play, and I think there's some potential there with a little bit of focus for Eli and Victor and Pierre Paul to have big games, and we'll be talking about them on Monday and Tuesday of next week. I think Sunday's show is going to be a good one for the Giants. I have to say, if I'm in management of a football team, I'm not a big hometown discount guy. Somebody says he'll give me a hometown discount, I begin to worry about where the focus is. You know, this is not preparation for a next career. There's a lot at stake here for everybody involved with the Giants. And I'm not talking about the fans. I mean, we're fans. But for the guys who play this game, we need people who are committed to playing this game. This is their career. It's not about preparation for the next career. So I think Jerry's got to make a decision. what's Bennett talking about here? Is he already transitioning to the next career? What's he going to give me during the season? What's he going to give me 2 years from now if we go long term? I mean, I think Jerry's got to make that decision. And then we pay the guy fairly. I'm not a big hometown discount guy. If this guy is good enough to merit a long-term contract, let's pay this guy. But I think Jerry's got to make that decision. You know, it's like Parcells with that defensive end Taylor in Miami. I can't remember the first name.
Jason?
Sorry for that, because he was a terrific player.
Jason
terrific
Taylor.
Player. Yeah, Jason. Yeah. Look, when he was going to be on Dancing with the Stars, Parcells said to him, Jason, I'm going to cut you. You want to dance? Go dance. You want to play football? You play football with me. I mean, I think that's what we have to do with Bennett. We got to make up our mind. What's this guy talking about? You know, hometown discounts. Why? Is he already transitioning to it? You know, to the next career? Yeah, I probably had one more, but I can't remember it. I got all excited about hometown discounts.
All right, Len, but no worries.
Look,
yep.
Okay, good show today, guys.
All right, Len, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot for the call, man. We appreciate it.
And it is a valid point that Len brings up. But the thing to keep in mind is that Martellus Bennett wasn't necessarily a distraction off the field this season, even though he did talk more often than not about some of his extracurricular activities and interests.
And don't you want a player to be happy where he's playing football?
Absolutely. And you want them to be somewhat well-rounded. But I understand where Len's coming from. You don't want them to be overly focused on going to the museum every Saturday and so forth. You want them to be focused on taking care of business in the classroom. And I think for the most part, he showed the Giants that he can do that. And he's kept most of his activities building them around football, not making them move in front of football for the
Bennett's
most part.
If Bennett's biggest extracurricular activity is going to the museum, I don't think we're going to have any problems.
It's true. I mean, they don't necessarily have anything to be concerned about. But he's a cultural man, which he has shown. You know, and he's into literary works and so forth.
I can't remember the first point that Len made. I was going to piggyback.
He was talking about the offensive line and how it's imperative for them to protect Eli Manning.
And I think the Giants have an interesting conundrum here in the offseason. You realize that the strength of your team is Eli Manning and your offense. That's where you won the Super Bowl. That's where your strength is. So when you go into the offseason, you look to improve based on free agency of the draft. Do you try to bolster your strength to make sure it remains your strength and as good as it's been? Or do you try to help where your weakness has been the last couple of years? And make no mistake, just based on rankings and yards and such over the course of the year, defense has been the Giants' weakness over the past few years. It just has been. Look at the numbers. You can't argue. So do you try to fix your deficiency, or do you try to keep your strength so that it remains such an advantage? It's an interesting dichotomy you got to figure out.
Well, in a perfect world, you want to do both, but the finances don't necessarily allow you to do that.
Thanks, Kreskin.
Well, all right. I'm just stating the obvious.
You want your cake and you want to eat it too.
Well, of course I want my cake.
Well, you can't do that.
Well, that would be option number one. And listen, it happens for some NFL teams if they're lucky from a financial perspective. I would think from the Giants' perspective, if they had to choose between the two, John, I would go to improve on your weaknesses. Balance out this team a little bit
even
more.
Even if it puts your franchise player at risk, Eli Manning,
I agree.
With an offensive line.
And I think Eli Manning is good enough and talented enough for him to overcome some of the inefficiencies that may take place on the offensive line if they lose a player or two, meaning getting rid of the ball quicker, utilizing the running game a little bit more, throwing passes to your backs in the flat. There's ways to circumvent that. It's hard to cover up missed tackles and guys who are out of position on defense.
So the message from Lance Meadow, put franchise quarterback at risk, improve defense.
There we go. So that means I guess we're going to bring back to the forefront the topic about who should be the backup quarterback. That's going to get more real estate here now.
Just kidding. But, you know what? It's funny. I think I agree with you. You know, we've seen Eli Manning over the course of the year mature to the point where, much like his older brother Peyton, when he had not a great offensive line in Indianapolis, he was able to make calls, make decisions, make audibles, make quick throws to compensate for that. And I think that is the key. If this Giant team wants to win a Super Bowl, the defense has to be better than it was this past year. And I think if you get Hakeem Nicks back healthy, I think even with the same offensive line, I think the Giants will be fine.
They have enough weapons.
Offense. We're going to squeeze one more call before we say goodbye. Our good buddy Dave's in Rochester. Dave, good morning.
Fellas, thanks for squeezing me in this morning.
No problem. What's up?
Just can I throw some numbers at you?
Sure.
Kenny Phillips making 2.0, and I want to go back to the defense. Kenny Phillips making $2 million. Ramdis Barden $500,000. Travis Beckham $500,000. Antrell Roll $6.75 million. Corey Webster $6.5 million. we've talked about it all week. Do we kind of have to reflect? And I know he had a bad year, but is there, maybe we have to finally let it go. And is that possible that to save a few bucks on letting Corey Webster go?
Well, the problem is if you let Corey Webster go, though, Dave, you're going to have to go out there and spend significant money, maybe the same money or if not more based on the signing bonus, to bring in somebody to replace Corey Webster.
But is it worth it to keep these four guys? I mean, Kenny Phillips and him is $8.5 million. I mean, can we maybe get a draft pick for less than that?
Well, I would say Kenny Phillips is a free agent, so they can easily let him walk. Beckham and Barden, same deal. Those guys can walk in free agency. I think Anchorol, I'll take care of him first, because I think that answer is easy. I think he's way too valuable as a safety in a swing corner to let him walk away. Do you maybe try to renegotiate his salary number down? Sure, you try that. I'm not sure if it's going to work, but you can give it a shot. I don't think that you can afford to cut Anchorol. Too much of a leader in the secondary and too versatile. Be able to play in that corner spot, the slot, and safety. As for Corey Webster, I think you go to Corey and you have a regular real conversation with him and you say, Corey, look, you didn't have the best year last year. You're in the last year of your contract. Clearly, and I think you admitted it as much yourself, you didn't play as well as you would have liked. You try to renegotiate his contract down, make his salary number smaller, and you hope to bring him back. If he refuses and he's going to cost $6.5-7 million on the cap, whatever the exact number is, I mean, I guess you have a conversation about whether or not you can let him go. But, Dave, I'd be extremely worried about going to war next year, counting on Prince Amukamara to cover your opponent's best wide receiver, counting on a second-year player in Jaron Hosley to be your number two corner, or relying on somebody you draft to be your number two corner. It can be very precarious and very risky. And I'd be, for a team that's trying to win a Super Bowl, to go into next season with every one of your defensive backs and quarterbacks having 3 years' experience or less, I think that's a huge risk.
All right, well, I just want to get your opinion. I just thought that was a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
For the secondary that we've all been talking about all week. So I guess I just wanted your opinion.
No, it's fair, Dave. Dave, before you say goodbye, I talked to Paul Dottino yesterday. He will co-host one of our shows, or at least call into one of our shows, one day next week. So.
Awesome. And then thank you for the Dottino tip. And then we're going to get eyes on, too. Where's he been? I know he's got the mailbag on the website, but we haven't heard from him in a little bit either.
Eisen will be in New Orleans this upcoming week, and then after the Super Bowl, we'll welcome Michael Eisen back in once or twice a week.
Are you and Lance going to the Super Bowl?
No. That is what you call not in the budget.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I look forward to it. Thank you very much.
All right, Dave. Thanks so much.
I would like to see Lance in New Orleans partying it up.
I would be more than happy to head down to the Big Easy.
Lance walking around like the big fishbowl hurricane with like the big sippy straw. It'd be funny.
Oh, absolutely. I could hold down my own.
Although you can't.
Oh, I don't know about that. We'll see.
You would be
trying to build up the stamina lately.
You would be face down on Bourbon Street by 10:15.
Well, they'd have to carry me off the street
in
then.
The gutter. Yeah, I'd have to carry you. No one else is going to do it.
Could be a tough crowd down there. I don't know. I still think I can handle myself, but apparently you're losing faith every single day.
Well, I don't want to get into college stories here.
Well, we may need to experiment. I may need to go down to the Big Easy.
Now you want to experiment in New Orleans. I don't know where Lance is going with this.
Yes, I know. Well, we thank Dave in Rochester for turning us on to this topic. We got to bring the attention back to Paul Dottino, by the way.
Pachats?
Yes. No, Dottino's not going down to the Big Easy.
No, he's not.
He's running his laps around the state of New Jersey.
Paul Dottino, not a New Orleans fan.
Really? No. Why is that?
Paul did the power walking around New Orleans. I think he ran into some interesting characters while walking around Bourbon Street, which should not be of any surprise to anybody.
Of course.
And Paul's more of a New Jersey guy, more of a Cincinnati guy, more of an Ohio type of guy. He's not necessarily a New Orleans throwing beads from balconies type of guy, if you know what I mean.
He doesn't like anything to disrupt his route. That's why. Well, and plus, you get those little beads stuck in the Nikes. It takes a lot of time to clean them out. Would not want to put him in that position. It'd be rough for him.
Yeah, so I don't think Paul's losing any sleep over not being down in New Orleans.
Instead, he gets to enjoy the beautiful state of New Jersey.
Now, Paul will be very excited to try to get the Giants to host the Super Bowl in MetLife Stadium next year. That would be like a life's dream for him, especially considering, you know, it might be the only time the Giants and Jets get a chance to host if this whole cold weather thing blows up in the NFL's face. Let's just be honest. There's a chance it happens. You never know. You could have a blizzard, one of those ice storms, or you get an inch of ice on the ground. Anything can happen. It's a risk. We all know it's a risk.
If it's a repeat of this year's weather conditions next year, everybody's in trouble.
No rain or precipitation, though. Just a little cold.
Very true.
Next week is supposed to go back into the 40s.
Yeah.
Which should be nice.
That's true. Absolutely. That should be better, but will you get 40s for next year's Super Bowl? That remains to be seen.
And honestly, the thing about it, New York has such good, you know, transportation and highways and all that stuff, and they know how to sand and salt the roads. I don't think weather would be an issue heading up to the game. I think they'd be fine, and with all the venues they have all over the place and the buses they can set up and all that stuff, I think where you run into the trouble is if the game itself is somehow compromised based on the weather, which, honestly, you're playing on field turf, it's going to have to be pretty darn severe for the game to get screwed up.
But
we've seen it.
Of course. But the weather, one way or another, is going to take a toll on this game, because you're probably going to have a warm weather dome team, perhaps, that's going to have an opportunity to get to the Super Bowl, and they may need to have to embrace these elements.
This year, there's no warm weather dome team.
You're right, but I'm just saying that it's nice to have the luxury of playing in a dome each and every year, leading up to now all of a sudden in 2014 when, you know, you're going to have to prepare for the outdoor elements, and it's not your typical Miami 70-degree weather.
Or Dallas with the roof open, whatever you're talking about.
You know, there is going to be an adjustment period. Plus, remember that Dallas Super Bowl, it was terrible outside for that game.
Well, and that's the thing, though. They're not prepared for that weather. They get snow and ice down in Dallas. They don't know what they're doing. They're walking around, the Cowboys booting the ice. They're flying around. They don't know what they're doing down there. Well, people are ready up here for that sort of stuff.
Yes, the state of New Jersey and the state of New York will get the ice trucks out, the salt trucks out. They'll take care of business.
They will take care of business.
But whether or not the players can take care of business remains to be seen.
Yes. And honestly, I think it's going to go fine, and I think it'll be something that they do now and then. Now, do I think they're going to, you know, play a Super Bowl in Soldier Field in Chicago? No, I don't think they're going to take that sort of risk. But anyway, we should wrap this sucker up.
Gotcha.
Excellent.
That sounds good.
As always, Lance, we appreciate it.
We will see you tomorrow.
Yeah, we will see you tomorrow, 9:30, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Then next week, we'll do some Super Bowl preview and do everything else New York Giants football. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow morning right here on Giants.com.
Have a good one.